Genesis 14 and 15 establish the mystery. It's big-timey mystery stuff. This is OOU stuff to the highest order. We meet Melchizedek. We find out about the battle of the five kings. We find out about these weird things where the carcasses are killed and cut in half, and everything's cut in half except the birds. We find out a whole lot about the covenant, the one and the only covenant. There's no such thing as an old covenant and a new covenant. There's only the covenant. The old, because it was only the type that revealed the one. The New Testament should be called, or the new covenant should be called, the one covenant. But that's another story. But at this leg in our journey, if we believe the mystics, he's about to do battle with five kings. The mystics say the five kings are your five senses. And this is where the real, I mean, it's a bad battle. Abraham chases these senses all over the Holy Land, so to speak. And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar. That's Amraphel. Well, anyway, Shinar's Babylon, you know. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Where are
you? Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that these made war with Berea, king of Sodom, and with Bershea, king of Gomorrah. Shinab, king of Admah, and Shem-Eber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar. All these were joined together in the vale of Sidon, which is the Salt Sea. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. And in the 14th year came Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him, and smote Rephaim. Now these are the giants, by the way. Rephaim and Ashtaroth-Karnaim, and the Zuim in Ham, and the Emim in Shavakiriathamim. Bet you didn't think I could do that.
There must be an awful lot to because it's impossible to see it.
No. All right. Okay. And the Horites in their Mount Seir unto Elparan, which is by the wilderness. And they turned and came to En-Mishpat, which is Kadesh, and smote all the country of the Amalekites, and also the Amorites that dwelt in Hazazon-Tamar.
They returned, that means the minions of Chedorlaomer?
Yeah, these other guys' as armies. Now watch, what's happening here, you got to hear this, is all these other guys' as army are running around and destroying Israel's mortal enemies. That's the lesson I want you to see for a minute.
But
you got it?
They have to do it because somebody else would?
Well, they're coming in and killing the usurpers on the way.
They're killing all kinds of giants, which these guys couldn't kill. The Zunim, the Zuzim, the Emim.
Eminem.
And the Rephaim were all giants. They were all somehow slipped back in time, so to speak. The last of the giants, the last of the race of giants was Goliath. And that's why it was so important that David killed him. They were a different race. They were like, if we believed in UFOs, we'd say they were from another. There were another kind of a being other than a human being. And it was vital that they be killed. And the last one to be killed, that's the reason David killed it. And that's the reason it was his imprature. It was necessary for that to take place in order for him to be made king. Now, but the thing that I want you to hear here, remember the Amalekites that we study all the time? All those feasts, that they were the first ones to mess around with Israel as they left Egypt? Remember the Elamites? All of these people are the enemies of Israel, not just in the promise, but surrounding the promise. And these five, these kings, these armies are not, they haven't, they're not fighting with Abraham yet. These armies are wiping out the enemies of Israel for them. Now, all Israel is doing in Abraham right now is sitting around resting. They're probably sitting out under the oak of Mamre, having a, you know, yeah, they're having some herbal tea. They're not doing anything. And while they're not doing anything except attending to what they're thinking, they don't even know about it. They don't have any television or radio. But all of Israel's enemies are being defeated around them. While Abraham is sitting around thinking about stuff. Now you got to hear this. Otherwise, you will never know what it means to rest. Can you hear that? A little bit. We got all of them. We got all of the enemies here. Abram is up there sitting around.
He's in Hebron, right?
He's in Hebron. He's at Hebron, near the Oak of Mamre. Okay, anyway. And they're doing battle at this really neat place. This place. The Vale of Sidon. The valley. This is the most beautiful place since the Garden of Eden. It's a really bad place. I can't tell you how bad it is there. It's the lowest place on the face of the earth. Which is, I find, incredibly fascinating. But anyway, and they returned and they came to Enmishpat, which is Kadesh. Remember Kadesh, anybody? Kadesh. So they were all the way down to here in Kadesh Barnea. That's where Israel's home for 39 years.
Belly of the snake.
And they turned and came to Enmishpat, which is Kadesh, and smote all the country of the Amalekites. You remember who the last Amalekite was? Herod. And also the Amorites that dwell in Hazazon Tamar. And there went out the king of Sodom and the king of Gomorrah. These are Sodom and Gomorrah in up here farther in the tablets of Elba? Who's the?
Probably Elba.
Elba, the tablets of Elba. Remember, they found 17,000 cuneiform tablets in Elba. That was the library for this huge city, I mean, nation, king, city, place. And this battle is recorded in those tablets. They talked about trading, the great trade they did with Sodom and Gomorrah, and how fantastic the cities of Sodom were and Gomorrah, and how enlightened the people were of Sodom and Gomorrah. It was the most beautiful of all cities. It was the most beautiful of all places. Yeah, with Chedorlaomer. Huh? We did too. I read it. With Chedorlaomer, the king of Elam, with Tidal, king of nations, and Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Arioch, the king of Elisar. Four kings with five.
What does that mean?
Four kings against five. And the veil, and there's all kinds of great stuff about what the four kings are. It's the senses versus the desires. You understand?
It's the. Told us
to still the wrong battle. Yeah. It's what we're That's why Abram can't be Abraham until he goes through and the battle of the senses versus both the senses and the desires are wiped out.
Probably the desires before.
Huh?
Four main desires or something.
Yeah. There are four main desires and five senses.
The real you is always at rest.
The real you, Abram's just sitting around drinking herbal tea. Now, Have we ever gone through the four basic desires in the battle? Huh? Well, it's pretty. I need to check my notes because it's not. It's a kind of thing that's interrelated, and I'd rather us do it when I'm more prepared than I am right now. It'd be kind of sloppy if I didn't know. And the Vale of Sodom was full of slime pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled and fell there, and they that remained fled to the mountains, and they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their victuals and went their way. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. Now, okay, let me finish this.
This is Lot,
June. Huh? No, this is Lot. And there came one that had escaped and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol, and the brother of Aner. And these were confederate with Abram. Now, there's a time with this. What we learn from this chapter, if we could see, is that first of all, these big battles are going on external to us. We are not necessarily even aware of them from our senses, but they have everything to do with the real us. And in this battle, there are certain times in which we have allies or confederates that are in the same way that Moses' father-in-law, the Kenite, helped him. The Kenites then were blessed. There are confederates here now that are helping, and God blesses them incredibly, normally with great wealth or success or whatever it is for helping Israel. It doesn't make them Israel. Do you understand?
Yeah.
When you talk about what wisdom is knowing the difference between a confederation and an alliance. Wisdom is knowing the difference between a confederate and an alliance. Wisdom is knowing that on occasion, wisdom is all timing. Wisdom knows that for a time, confederations are okay. And then at the right time, they're all gone. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Make to yourselves friends of the unrighteous mammon. That's what that mystery parable in Luke means. I mean, we've got, let's face it, look around us. We are in that practical means right now. God could have snapped his fingers and every one of us could have been rained down gold or precious gems on us and none of you would have ever had to have worked, but we as a body have confederates through you in your world.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand. Confederates are friends who are dangerous.
Temporary friends.
Oh.
Temporary.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What is
mammon? Mammon, the things that you have confidence in. Yeah, Rick's parents are a great example.
Ross Reagan may turn out to be.
Yeah,
Ross may
well,
turn out
to be. Ross may be one too, but I'm just saying, my parents letting us use the ring.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
And they've been blessed unbelievably.
Yeah, I mean, just, yeah,
time.
Right. You understand? So, we are radical Christianity. What idiots in radical Christianity do is they say, okay, they're going to cut off everything at the right time and no confederate, and they all die if you look at them. There's been 1,000 movements in Christianity that were that radical nature, and they all died.
Try to remove themselves from the world.
Right, they removed themselves from the world.
Instead
of letting it happen in time, using the confederates, as Abram did here. What we've just read in Genesis, we came across a strange name, Amraphel. Amraphel. And nobody has ever heard of Amraphel in history. But who Amraphel is Hammurabi. And he's the one who wrote the Hammurabi Code that became...
What verse is
Amorphon?
Nine.
One.
One
and nine and...
Sure.
You see
king
him?
King of Babylon?
Yeah. He's king of Shinar or Babylon. Now, Chedorlaomer is king of Elam. Now, Elam is east of Babylon and north of Persia. We studied it in stealth. I don't think we studied it here, what its meaning. Remember the mountains? And
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Sure we
said. Well, I thought everybody knew. I'm sorry. Does anybody, let me ask, does anybody know what the Hammurabi Code is?
Isn't that the oldest codificational law? Genesis? Was it was kind of like the disciples?
No. Hammurabi's code, Hammurabi was in the area of Babylon, and he, in history, developed, as far as anyone knows, the first code of civil and criminal behavior or practice. And it is extant. There are copies of it in several different places.
Wait, if he's king of Babylon, he was, what's his name, successor?
Mm-hmm.
He was, instead of Abram, he became king of the world.
Right. Hammurabi...
What had happened to...
He was exiled for some strange reason that I can't remember right now. And then later killed by Jacob.
Okay, and then Hammurabi.
I mean by Esau, huh?
Hammurabi was Abram's replacement.
Yeah.
It's so perfect that he would, that's wrong. You brought up this, you know, as I remember when we were studying in history class, it was like a, living codes or, it was like societal living codes or something at the time. But it's just funny that would come out of Babylon.
It's so funny that he would be Abram's replacement.
And he was Abram's replacement.
Having a good time. The other guy's writing rules.
Okay, now. Gomorrah, the name Gomorrah, no matter what it looks like, and it's like Hebrew's name stuff for what it was in the Hebrew, Amora, and it means a ruined heap. Sodom is Sedom in Hebrew and means parched or burning, or it's what they would call bituminous kind of gunk. The thing that you have to remember, though, is this. See this right here? It says Zoar. That was one of the five cities of the plain. Now, there were five cities in this, Sodom and Gomorrah and Zoar and two others. Zoar was just like a little teeny village. The other... Sodom and Gomorrah and the other two were fairly, populous places. And that'll be important in a minute, huh?
How long is it out?
Oh, that valley is 45 miles. Now, the peoples defeated by the Babylonian kings were the Rephaim, who were giants, the Zuzim, who were giants, the Emim, who were giants, and the Horites, who were giants, plus the Amalekites and the Amorites. Remember the... Well, let's just leave it at that for now. The word that's Rapha, comes out as giants. Another translation for it is dead. Now, I don't want to spend a lot of time here, but all this ties into what we studied in the myths and the stars, so the 12 signs of the zodiac. Someday I want us to have this capacity where we have a screen in the sky and we can show the signs of the zodiac passing through the night so that the same story is retold every night of our lives. It's always up there. But anyway. The places named in verses 5 and 6 are the ancient trade routes. The eastern kings used to come from Persia and Babylon, come down through here. on their way to key trade with Egypt. They were the major trade routes. Now this is what Josephus says about this time. When the Assyrians had the domination over Asia, the people of Sodom were in a flourishing condition, both the riches and the number of their youth. There were five kings that managed the affairs of the country. The Assyrians made war upon them, and when the battle was enjoined, the Assyrians were conquerors and imposed a tribute on the kings of the plain, who submitted for 12 years, and so long as they continued to pay their tribute. But on the 13th year they rebelled, and the army of the four Assyrian kings came against them. These kings laid waste to all of Assyria and overthrew the offspring of the giants. Now when the Sodomites joined the battle with the Assyrians, the fight was very obstinate. Many of them were killed, and the rest were carried captive, among which captives was Lot, who was assisting the Sodomites. Okay. Now apparently Abraham had made some sort of pact or contract with the Amorites, where he was the supreme party. He may have possibly bought a number of servants from them. This also is indicated from the meaning of the word Hebron. Oh, that's another story. The Amorites had a good reason to support Abram, since their own people had been victims of the attack. Now Abraham is about to take off. Now he, huh?
You were going to explain about the four kings.
I'm going to do it probably Thursday night. Trained is the word hanuk, and it means the same word for disciple, where it says he had 318 trained retainers. They were trained from youth for only one purpose, for war, because of the danger from bandits and unfriendly tribes. They were well trained. There were 318 of them, so that they had been born in his camp, it says.
Which means that they were
loyal beyond loyal. Yeah, plus the fact that, I mean, they had their parents and their brothers and sisters. I mean, we're talking, he had a large community here, and he had 318 men of war that were highly trained. They were like, you know, they knew the Chinese stuff.
Anum.
Huh?
They were all
Anum. Who were they? What does that mean?
Not girly.
Schwarzenegger. No, but what does that mean?
They were tough.
And what could they do to their enemies?
Well, they could squash their heads like people.
Anything else?
They couldn't act.
They all went to Pasadena Playhouse.
but before this last movie, not counting Total Recall, his movies have grossed over $1 billion.
That's an evidence of the condition of the world.
For me, maybe not for you, but for me, that's a.
That's a lot of bread. That's a lot of bread.
We could go to just Mallorca and
Party was about that much. Yeah,
now, in verse 13, and there came one that had escaped and told Abram of the Hebrew, and told Abram the Hebrew, for he had dwelt in the plain of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol, the brother of Aner, and these were confederate with Abraham, as we said. And when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, brother there just means his relative, he armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan. Now Dan is the northernmost part of the promise. Dan is judgment. The word Dan means judge. The northernmost, Dan is at all. We haven't done this either, but Dan, the tribe Dan, means judge. And they're at the border of the promise. Dan, the ones, the ones that are the type of Dan are always in danger of going over the border. You understand? The ones, each of the 12 tribes of Israel reveal something about the bride. That's why they exist. Okay. And he divided himself against them, he and his servants by night, and smote them and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. And I think I told you before that Damascus is the oldest city in the world, without exception. And he brought back all the goods and also brought again his brother Lot and his goods and the women also and the people. Now Abram and his confederates struck at night. They were far from the scene of battle in the Valley of Sidon, so the Babylonian armies were taken by surprise. They were also probably all drunk as a practical matter. He struck so fast that all the wives and daughters were rescued. Now that's the reason, one of the reasons it says, and the women here is because if in these times, when the women were captured, they were to be slaves or concubines. But if then there was a rescue attempt, they were the first ones killed. And they were so that there were always, the women were always at risk, ultimate risk. Because if they were captured, their captors would kill them the instant anybody tried to rescue them. That was a known tactic. And so we're talking, keep them from being rescued.
Keep them from being rescued. What happened?
Because that was like, I mean, that was cutting off a person's tribe in a way, right?
Huh? Oh, yeah, they were cutting off their posterity.
What?
If you cut off, I mean, the women, the yeah.
You can't have a posterity
without it. He struck so fast that all the wives and daughters were rescued, all females. Now again from Josephus. When Abram heard of the calamity, he was at once afraid for his kinsman Lot, and pitied the Sodomites, his friends and neighbors. Now, you don't think about that. You don't, when you go to Sunday school, you don't think that the Sodomites were Abram's friends and neighbors. And thinking it proper to afford them assistance, he did not delay it, but marched hastily, and the fifth night fell upon the Assyrians near Dan. Before they could arm themselves, he slew some as they were in their beds, before they could suspect any harm, and others who had not yet gone to sleep but were so drunk they could not fight ran away. Abram pursued after them, till on the second day he drove them in a body unto Hobah, a place belonging to Damascus, and there demonstrated that victory does not depend on multitude and number of hands, but on the alacrity and courage of soldiers overcome the most. But the alacrity and courage of soldiers overcome the most numerous bodies of men. While he got the victory over so great an army with no more than 318 of his servants and three of his friends, all those that fled returned home ingloriously. All that means, all the kings and their people went belly up.
But is this bad?
Do you understand that for me, and I think you don't, maybe you haven't considered it, but that for you also, that if this doctrine that we've been delivered into fails, there is no hope.
Oh, yes.
This is the last refuge.
Yeah.
Understand that? You understand that's the same. That's the same place that Abraham is in now. He's followed, gone around through his life, through all the stuff.
Yeah, he spent time with the kings of Egypt.
Right. He's now at the place where if what he sees as this doctrine, the fullness of the gospel, the full doctrine that he's been delivered into fails, then he's lost.
He's been cut off from religion, cut off.
He tried all possible solutions to the problem of self. None of them worked. Do you understand you only have one problem? the problem of self. Yourself is the center of life, individually and collectively. If the self is not at peace, not whole, not centered, not understood, then everything in your world is wrong. The aspect of the self must be at peace. Now, I don't know that you remember that all of the time. If the center isn't at peace, then everything is wrong. And what will happen is the wrong will attack you at your weakest point, always. The problem then is never the thing that you're being, the thing on the surface. The problem is the center isn't at peace. I have to tell you tonight that it's on the verge of being declared anathema. I don't know what that will mean. There's too many unanswered questions. That's never happened with. But she is in such a state of total engulfment with self that she can't see or hear anything. All she's doing is becoming a spot on the feast of charity. She's forgotten that the self is a created creature. She wants to become the creator. Now tell me, if that happens, and I pray that it doesn't, they're meeting right now so that they don't have to meet with me. If that happens, it will be because she has taken a position on her own desire for self-divinity. That's what judgment is. You can say, I don't want to judge. I don't want to judge this until hell freezes over. But the fact is, you do want to judge it or you wouldn't. Diakrino is judgment in the Greek. It means to condemn down. Now, all of you are guilty of that. An opinion is a judgment. You understand that? What's at stake here is the absolute surrender of self to God. That's what's at stake here for Abraham. That's what's at stake for you. The complete life that we're all searching for requires nothing less than a complete surrender. You, the you that you've known thus far, are the five kings and the four senses. All of them must surrender to Abram, in this case, the type of the Father. It's time that you stopped negotiating with your judgments. Each of us will continue judging until we see the danger of judging. I mean, you know, a question of why do you judge? Because you want to judge. I mean, do you understand that? You want to judge more than you want not to judge. You got to see that a judgment is an act of self. It's not an act of lying down yourself. It's an act of rising yourself to self-divinity. There's no such thing as laying down your life in a state of judgment. It's impossible. You judge because you like to judge. You judge because it brings life to self. Because it's comparison. You know, I told Ed, Ed had some hesitations about the Edrick investments. And I told him I'd buy them out. I mean, I don't have any money, but I guarantee you I can raise it by tomorrow morning. You won't have to. You won't have any business judging it anymore. I mean, that's what you have to do with everything. There is no condition of life by which judgment is justified. Judgment always is the elevation of self. It is always an act of self-divinity. And it is always in opposition to agape or divine love. It's the exact opposite of agape. It's an act of violence. It's an act of murder or maiming. I'm tired of your judgments. If you don't like it here, leave. You cannot have a judgment about someone without having you as the center of attention. So what's the response to the judgment? Normally the response to the judgment is an attack. And then a counterattack. And then another counterattack. And it's this fight that we've just been describing between the senses and the desires. And the real you is sitting there at rest drinking some herbal tea. But stop giving any breath to it. It's just stupid. If yourself gets your attention, you can bet you've lost the battle.
Yeah. I mean, that is just like you start digging yourself down. So try to scramble back up and hit down. Just as you try to bring yourself back up again.
Listen.
When, that's where it started.
Whatever gets your attention will get you. You understand that?
Yeah.
Whatever gets your attention captures you. You've spent most of your life, I see you, all of you, captured by self. Let it go. Bye-bye, self. Tired of messing with you. Take a hike. Okay, if the self has gotten your attention, even if fighting, then what happens? What are you? You'll be self-preoccupied person. Self-preoccupied person is a defeated person. You're defeated once self has got your attention. That's why the desires and the senses have to be defeated here in this battle, what Abraham is about to enjoy. That you no longer, that's why Jesus said, the first requirement of a disciple is to abandon yourself. Not to try to make self better or worse. Not to consider it. Not to fight habits or not habits. To abandon. What's the path? Ever and always self-surrender. If you go self-deification, which is the rampant thing and now in the New Age movement and some of the Christianity.
What's that mean?
Self, the idea of the I self, God, the God self. Sort of an earth song kind of thing.
Have you ever seen that go like this?
It's kind of like a Whole Foods market.
Yeah, it's a Whole Foods market kind of thing. No, if it's self-deification or self-mortification, which is the big extreme of that is in Iran, the sect of the Shiites who believe in taking the whips and whipping themselves about 43 times a year to the point of blood. Both of them lead to cultism. Do you understand? They're both extremes of the same thing. They're cults. I don't care if there's 700 million people in the cult. It's still a cult. What's the opposite of self-deification or self-mortification? The opposite of each one of them is self-surrender. That's difficult. It's difficult as long as you think self, there's something for self. Now, Abraham here, he'd been all over Babylon, he'd been all over Egypt, he knew the mysteries of the universe. He could make great herbal tea. Yeah. But he still had to surrender self. He had 318 retainers that knew Chinese stuff.
He could knock the meat cuts off and across the room.
So he had that.
With a wooden spoon.
No worries.
No worries.
Self-surrender comes when you know you have lost. Are you ever going to get that through your head? Self-surrender comes when you know you've lost the battle. It's the strongest and most comprehensive explanation of this doctrine into which we've been delivered. It's not for the strong, because the strong can afford to have judgments. The strong can afford to have opinions. Paul said, "We are bond slaves to every man." You can't be a bond slave to the homeless if you have opinions. Capisce? Or any other person. No works, no words, no principles, no ought-tos. We are to hand back to God the self that He gave us. To surrender the one and the only thing that you truly own. You only own one thing. I don't care how much capitalism you believe in and how much property you have. You really and truly own one thing, and that's your right to yourself. To come into that door, to come into this body, means that you surrender your right to yourself. That's what it means to be a believer. That means you surrender the right to be protective of you and yours. It's a big deal. It's the biggest deal that can happen to you as a human being. You've lost the right to yourself. That's what God demands of you. Not in some Gnostic system which says, I may have all this, but I've given it to God. It's that you have surrendered the right to yourself in the day-to-day testing in among the brethren. That's a biggie. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. If anyone wishes to be a follower of mine, he must leave his self behind. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I that liveth, but Christ who liveth in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. You must be crucified. Crucified means to be dead. Crucified means to have lost the right to yourself. That's what Abraham is right now. The moment he recognizes that, a mystery is going to take place. He's going to be fed personally by Melchizedek. And I promise you, that same Melchizedek will feed you personally also the moment you surrender the right to yourself. And you know internally when that happens. Once and for all time. Most of you have never done it. You've never surrendered the right to yourself. It's time you consider it carefully. So we'll see if we can do some stuff on the desires versus the senses, the four kings versus the five kings Thursday. Anybody have anything else? Take it big personally.